agenda in front of you, and I hope it was circulated earlier. But before we get into the business of today's meeting, we have a number of apologies. The Minister, Deputy Minister, the DG, Honorable Tadekulu, Honorable Mandela, and the Chair, as it was indicated earlier on. Those are the apologies that we have. We don't have any other apology. Members, are we happy with the agenda? Yes, thank you very much. Now, without wasting any time, we are going to hand over to Savak to do the presentation. You will introduce yourself in full, and then go straight to the presentation.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. Thank you very much for having me here today. Do I remain seated? Is that okay?
Yes.
That's no problem. Just to give you a bit of background, I'm John Adam. I've been a member of the Veterinary Council for a number of years, and I'm chairman of their finance committee and also part of what we call the food safety and security. I'm also a private veterinarian in practice in Cape Town. I practice in Durbanville. And I just want to start off by apologizing that there are not other members of the council here today, but unfortunately it clashed with a full council meeting. We have four full council meetings a year, and our full council meeting was taking place today and tomorrow. So our Vice President, Dr. Charlotte Nkuna, was due to present, and then they, of course, she will be very busy with duties at this council meeting. They asked me if I would come and do the presentation. So that is why I'm here today. And thank you very much. So I'll go straight on to the presentation. And you all know what the Veterinary Council does and what we are, and we have been doing strategic planning for the next 5 years, looking at various ways. We had it in Darba in February, where we had a whole strategic planning session, and I'm just going to outline in brief to you what we decided for the future. So just to start off with, I'm briefly going to, you've got it all in front of you. I tried to minimize the amount of abbreviations because I always think it's very confusing if you have too many abbreviations, and please stop me if there are ones that you don't understand. That's just the abbreviations we will be using. The vision of the council is to advance public and animal health through quality veterinary services for all. We decided that our most important strategic goal going forward for the next 2 years is to drive transformation of the veterinary profession to address the needs of the people of South Africa more effectively and inclusively. One of our biggest problems with transformation is that it's quite a number of years down the road, and we just don't seem to be transforming enough, that we're getting people from all different groups coming into the veterinary profession. And we've tried to address that from right at source level, and we're still finding our biggest problem, or two of the biggest problems. The one is basic education. So the people who have access to evaluate relevant research and data are finding that the primary school education makes it very difficult for many children to come through to high school and then go on to a degree that involves a lot of science and higher education. So we've decided that we will lobby the minister, even the Department of Basic and Higher Education, that we can find ways to remedy this, and we must source and develop educational material for children. So veterinary science has never been a preferred profession for the children of South Africa in many cases, and we want to try and change this. And we're going to do this through liaising and lobbying the Minister, Department of Social Works, and then also through school farming projects. As far as higher education goes, we've got to look at transforming at student level, developing further discussions with students, and a process of recurriculation. So it's very important that when the student qualifies as a veterinarian, that their day one skills are competent to go out there and perform their duties. And this also involves the One Health concept, which I will address just now. The most important thing that we're finding is that we are getting more and more students from all across South Africa coming into veterinary science, but a lot of them are finding it difficult when they get to university to cope with the standard of skills needed. So in higher education, what we're going to really emphasize is the role of the veterinary team, cross-functional training, veterinary professional life education, and by that I mean one of our biggest things, if we go to the next VPL, wellness focus, one of the biggest problems we find, and it's not only a South African context, it's all over the world, is that there's a lot of stress in this job, not only in the small animal, companion animal, but also in the large animal. And we've got to try and focus on how to help these students cope with the stress of the job. And then what's very important is future jobs. It's no use. Remember, the South African Veterinary Council doesn't only represent veterinarians, also represents the animal health technicians and also the veterinary nurses. We've got to make sure that we have and create jobs for all these people. And I'm convinced that there are jobs for these people. We've just got to be able to create the posts and have them suitably trained. And then council is also involved on various advisory bodies. We're also looking at training in the South African developing community region. There are veterinary faculties in Zimbabwe, there's one in South Africa, and there's now one just starting in Botswana. And there is one in Namibia, and we hope to help and get the standard on the same level for all these universities. And then training institutions that do the training of veterinary students must conduct a climate survey. The veterinary professionals and team, what's very important for the council is liaison with the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and I must say up to now, at the present time, we have got a very good working relationship with DAF. We find that we have access to the Minister, we have access to the highest echelons of DAF, and we get very good cooperation from them. We don't bluff ourselves that there are not a lot of problems out there, and we do address them. And you know, when we have to call a spade, we call a spade, but we do get a lot of cooperation from the Minister and the Department. The collaboration with the Animal Health Forum, that is the Animal Health Forum, that consists of all members involved in the animal health industry in South Africa, and that would be private as well as state. The Council collaborates very closely for them. As I've mentioned, the Department of Agriculture, and then the implementation of the private-public partnership plans, and then obviously educating the profession, that's part of our goals in terms of what their job is going forward. So up to now, we've tried to change this veterinary council whole attitude, that we become more user-friendly. So the members of the council have tried to get to their people, because remember, every vet, every animal health technician, every nurse has to belong to the veterinary council to be registered with them. And unfortunately, there's always been a perception that we're the big throwing the whip and the stick up top there, and we're trying to change that. So we've had a number of workshops that we can look at the positive ways that we can go forward. Because at the end of the day, the Veterinary Council has a huge responsibility, not only to companion animals, dogs and cats and horses, but the very, very important role in maintaining and helping food safety and security in the country. And we realize how important that food safety and security is. And we need to educate the public in the role of the Veterinary Council in this. As I said earlier, one of our goals is to look at the professionals and the team and alleviate unemployment where there is unemployment, and that is mainly amongst animal health technicians. And to me, that unemployment is a lot of it due to just not putting in place the right training, and then secondly, when the people are properly trained, finding jobs for them, because they would definitely help with food safety and security in South Africa. The second point is there's new inspector versus layperson. The Veterinary Council only has jurisdiction over members, vets, AHTs, and vet nurses. And with a new inspectorate that we've brought into being, is that we will now take on laypersons who are trying to do work that is in the sphere of veterinary health. And we do find that is quite a big problem. There are lay people out there doing work that impacts on the food safety and security of the country. The Animal Welfare Forum, animal welfare worldwide is becoming more and more important, and it's not only animal welfare in terms of dogs and cats and horses, but it is also animal welfare in terms of production animals. So we've got to ensure that we maintain international standards, and we should do that in any case ethically, that the animals that are kept, the pigs and the sheep and the cattle, are kept in the fairest way to their animal welfare. Technological advances, that speaks for itself. Then there's NGOs and intergovernmental organizations that we've worked with. And then obviously one of the most important things is regulating the veterinary profession. And that we do through a number of rules and regulations that are in the Veterinary Act. And those we have just revised, because in this modern world, fortunately, you have to change those rules according to the changes that are taking place in society. For example, you have to comply with Competition Commission rules and regulations as far as advertising and all that thing goes. So we've changed a lot over the last 2 years. So our strategic goal really is to drive an effective communications plan with all the stakeholders so as to position the veterinary professions as the preferred go-to source to address the animal health and welfare needs of the people of South Africa. And I think that's very succinctly put. We don't have to go into the detail, but the most important thing is that the people realize that the veterinary profession is the one responsible for the health and welfare of the animals. We also will do this through including stakeholders not currently involved, the AHF again, the industry, and animal owners. And this will also, our communication strategy must include consumer organizations, scientists, social welfare, animal welfare organizations, ministries. So all we're saying is that as a council, it is our duty to go out there and communicate better with everyone as to what our functions and purpose is, and of the profession. We are going to develop an urgent communication plan, and I'm not going to go into the details, but that we're already working on. This is well upstream, lateral, downstream. These are all words that are very fancy to me, but all it really means is how are we going to communicate with those people above us, how are we going to communicate across broad spectrum that we're working within the profession, and then downstream right down to the public, the school child, etc. So upstream, communication with the government, and in my view that is good, but there is a huge room for improvement I'm not going to go into the detail now, but there's even one of the biggest problems to me is the confusion between the role of the Department of Health and DAF and even DEA. There's so much cross-pollination, and each one keeps its own. I was just mentioning some to Dr. Mongasani this morning about the new Medicines Act and where vets haven't been totally included. I'm not going to go into that today. I don't think it's for discussion, but that's the sort of thing that we've got to look at. We can't look at these things in little pigeonholes. It's one health. Human, environment, animals, it's all together. Sorry for going off the point a bit there. So the importance of specific issues are we going to look at, and then the foster role of veterinary strategy, rollout of the veterinary strategy. And that's always a wish we've got to have, but it's not always so easy to do. The lateral communication strategy, that's within the profession, and that is through things, as you see there, newsletters, workshops, sharing experiences, and conducting many surveys. I'm not going to deal too long on that. That's just all the various ways we're going to do this lateral thing. And the main thing is giving information out to vets and getting all vets on the same level. I think I'm going to, if you don't mind, we're going over these ones. And then the downstream, that's building relationships with end users, and that's so critical to us. And we've got a very interesting, as a profession, we've got a very interesting end user, and that is from the guy who owns the dog and cat, right through to the big commercial farmers, through to the wildlife, which is becoming more and more important in our industry. So that must be a very important part of our communication is downstream, that we don't be seen to be this high and mighty association that sits up top there. Once again, I'm not going to go through these, but this will involve the media, sorting it out, talking to all the different role players. Okay, the third strategic goal that I want to address, and I'm just going to address that briefly, is restructuring the South African Veterinary Council as to be more inclusive of all members and professions and better serve the members of the group. And once again, the restructuring we're looking at now, and I'm part of that committee that we're looking at the restructuring, because it's such a mobile world and that we've got to change all the time. And maybe too much in the past, we've sat in, this is our structure, and that's the way it's got to be. The one problem that we do have is that where we do want to restructure a bit, then we've got to change the laws and everything, and you folk are the lawmakers, but sometimes to me it takes very long to get those things going. And sometimes by the time it's enacted, you want to move on to the next point already. But I don't know if there is a solution for that. So we're investigating how we're going to structure, we're investigating who the members are of council, and that whole report will be done within the next year or so. So that's to align the South African veterinary structure with current needs of its members. We're also looking at the international scene, how veterinary councils throughout Africa work, throughout the world work, and trying to pick the best and create the best for this country. So for all of the above, the legal department is going to review the act, and we're going to review representation on council, develop a transformation policy. We already have one in place, but transformation once again is very interesting in the veterinary profession. You know, I always say that when I qualified a long time ago, and I'm not going to tell you how long ago it is, but it was quite a while, there was, I think, two women vets out of a class of 45. And nowadays there's 150 students, of which probably 120 are females and the rest are males. And that's worldwide. And that transformation I don't think you can enforce. You know, you cannot, I don't know if you'll ever be able to enforce it. And I think the same is going to happen. I said the other day in the meeting, I guarantee you in 20 years' time,
profession will be more than representative of our population, because it's going to change. People are not going to see the veterinary profession as working with cows like their parents and their grandparents did. It's going to be a scientific profession that they, and it's up to us to teach them to do that. And that's the way we must transform. Sorry once again for going off the point. Once again, to look at our budgets and generate income, being on the finance committee, I have got a lot of insight into our finances. The Veterinary Council is very secure in its finances. We manage to keep our payments that our members have to make to a minimum, but we still manage to get everything done that we need getting done. I think that our financials and that are very secure. We've got a very good capital base. The only danger that we as council face is often legal action, and we get threatened with legal action from various people who have their own interests at heart. I won't go into the detail. And I think that's about it. Thank you very much for your time. If there's any questions, I welcome them, and we can see if we can answer them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Adam. DG Chief Director, do you have additions or do you want to comment or anything? You're okay. You're covered. I hope you're okay. You did not say because you are not funding SAVAC. So therefore, you got nothing to comment on in anything that you don't fund. Members, it is now an opportunity for you to have questions if you have any and comments. The Honourable Stain, the first one, any other hand? Honourable Papa, yeah, those are the two hands that you have. Honourable Stain.
Okay, I don't know if this will work. Can you hear me? Seems like I've got bird flu this morning or something. Looking at this avian. Hey, I fixed it. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation.
I must put this one off.
Yes, please.
Where do I do that?
Chairperson, thank you for the presentation. I just want to find out regarding increase in disease outbreaks in the country, if the Veterinary Council finds that there is an outbreak. I had a discussion with someone last week or the week before, and I still can't remember the name. Dr. Morisani maybe can assist me, or someone here. When diseases break out in the country, and you are supposed, I don't know all these technical words like lateral and all those things, but this one is when you have to report it to a veterinarian, those diseases. Do we enforce it? Because a week or two ago there was a disease that affected mainly sheep in the Free State, and it had to do with E. coli. And it took almost 4 or 5 months before people realized almost the whole of the Free State had this similar disease. And firstly, it was wrongly diagnosed, and then it was another one, and now I can't remember the name of the disease again. So funny thing. So disease outbreaks, do we find that it is on the increase? Do we find new things coming into the country? In plants, we see that. We saw the outbreak of a few things that wasn't here before. So I just want to find in animals if we do see that. And are we monitoring for that? I think that's more important. The second thing is we had a discussion last year about vaccines and what is happening in OPP. I still have my reservations about the vaccines and OBP. We've seen them. It looks like there is an effort to make sure that the relevant vaccines is available in enough stock. They've changed the process of selling directly to the public. So from your side, I just want to find out if you are currently satisfied with the vaccines from OBP specifically, and if there are enough of the relevant vaccines. Then the veterinarian students, the Zuma year, how does it go? Are we ready for next year? Is there new plans in place, something, lessons learned, or something that we can improve on. And then there was also a discussion last year, Chair, about the increase of students. I can't remember which university applied. I think it was Free State, if I can remember correctly, to also have students to study veterinarian science, because I think we are running a bit low on certain numbers. And then the OIE report. Are we busy with the implementation of the OIE report? It's now 2 years, 3 years. I don't know, time flies very quickly since the OIE has submitted the report. Are we still discussing that? And then the last one, Chairperson, bird flu. I see that apparently we can vaccinate. Maybe it's a question to the department, but I want to know from you, are our veterinarians involved in the testing of the bird flu, and do we have something like a vaccine that we can give to the birds, and how will that work? That's all. Thank you, Chair.
Another couple. Thank you, Chair. Let me also join in understanding and appreciating the report, and also the fact that she stole a little from my questions. The one I wanted to... the one I just wanted to find out, how much are you involved in the issues of outbreaks, like one that kind of which is always happening, and that is there any limit or any reason for limiting this involvement of these institutions, which I think only one here, one there, I know they are important, but is there maybe the specific reason that it can only be in this institution that this training? You also mentioned the situation of lobbying the minister, which I suppose that you also mean, you also think of lobbying the parliament through this committee or the chair. In this case, do you have any serious challenges that would need attention in the process of the performance of the council? Thank you.
Dr. Adam?
The answer
is yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for those questions. They are all very, very important questions, and I will just go down the list as we have discussed them. The first question was on diseases. Now, it's very important to remember, and my colleagues on the left here are the monitors of those diseases. So in South Africa, we have diseases that are scheduled. The scheduled diseases are the ones that are controlled diseases. In other words, if there's an outbreak of one of those diseases, then it affects the safety of the country's animal health and eventually the food safety and security. So that's very important. And the scheduled diseases are controlled by statute. In other words, if animals get scheduled diseases, then we have to take certain actions. Even if in private practice, if you go to a farm and you find, let's say, tuberculosis or brucellosis, which are very, very important scheduled diseases in this country, you have to then work with the department and hand it over to combat these diseases. And there are a number in all the different species of these scheduled diseases. My personal opinion is that the private veterinarian is going to have to take more and more important role in combating these diseases. It cannot just be a government role, and there are certain deficiencies, and once again, you know, it's not a criticism, I think it's something we must look at doing, is that, we'll get to that a little bit later, diseases don't know boundaries. They don't know the Northern Cape boundary stops here. They don't know the Western Cape boundary stops here. They don't know that Mpumalanga boundary stops there. So at the moment, a lot of the veterinary
decisions and that are made within the provinces. And that's when a disease spreads, it spreads across a border within a day. And now this whole thing has got to be done. So there is a problem to me that there's got to be a lot of national coordination of these diseases. And I think that does agree with us. It's a problem that they are addressing. But that is the main thing. You asked whether the scheduled diseases are under control. They'll never be totally under control. You've got to manage them. You know, the latest avian flu I was reading, and I'm no poultry expert, definitely not. I don't know much about chickens. But those were apparently brought in by wild birds flying over the border from Zimbabwe and Africa. And there's no ways that we can control them. We can't even control the humans crossing the border, never the mind of the birds. So, you know, that's why you've got to be very vigilant as a professional, and as that we know how and when to stop these things. That answers your first question. The second question on vaccines on OBP, and that is the perennial question. It's come up a number of years. My personal opinion is that you've got to give the new structured honest-to-word vaccines a chance to prove that they are going to do their job properly. There have been encouraging signs. One of the examples was there's a disease called Durine. I don't know if you folk know Durine. So it's a very important horse disease, venereal disease, and it spreads especially in the rural areas. But it also is very important from the point of view of exporting horses, which is a huge industry for this country. And there was a shortage of an agent to test the disease, which is made by Honest Support. And it was very encouraging that we were able to go to the new OBP and talk to them, and they sorted this out. And that's the way it should be done. So without being critical, I think we must give it another 6 months to a year. You cannot change these things overnight, but just say we must. It's a wonderful institution. It's there. We must just see that it's run properly. That's my personal opinion. As far as, does that answer your question on the vaccines? The next one is the so-called Zuma year, which is a CCS. Once again, it's very much like the vaccine. It was a totally new thing. It took a long time to institute. I think it's a brilliant system. It must be used. Personally, I think it should be used more to reach the rural areas. I don't think it's reaching the rural areas. But that takes money and time, and I think things are already better. I know that we're now going into our third year, which is unbelievable, of this scheme. And my contact with it is that it's getting a bit better. But there's two things that have got to happen. You've got to have the right facilities for these vets to work in the rural areas. So you can't put a vet in Toyandu and say, there, go and do your work. You've got to give them the facilities and the clinic and that sort of thing. But I think it is a brilliant system. We must just see that it works properly. And funny enough, very few of the vets have been negative to it. They were all terrified of this thing, but they actually think this is actually a very good system. Wait, I must put my glasses on for the terrible writing. But the increase in students for veterinary, that's a very difficult one, the increase in veterinary students. And I think that will answer the honourable member's question as well. Veterinary science throughout the world is the most expensive faculty to establish and run, because you get few students with a huge amount of exposure to practical experience, and it's a very wide field. So all over the world there's a shortage of veterinarians because it's so expensive to establish these schools. And even South Africa at the moment, we have the one school at Honest Support. They've increased now to 150 students. It's probably not enough for the whole country. But as I say, it does cost a lot of money to establish those schools and to get it running. My personal opinion is that there should be at least 200 to 300 students coming out per year to go to the growing needs of this country in terms of companion animals, because more and more people are keeping and looking after their dogs and cats, which is the one side. And even more important is we've got to have a lot of people available to do the food safety and security. And that's not only the clinical stuff, that's the surveillance of diseases, that's the abattoirs, all that sort of thing. So that is very important. The OIE report, we're very privileged to have the president of the OIE sitting next to me, and I would like to congratulate him for that achievement. That was amazing that he was made president of the OIE. I'm not entirely sure, and maybe he could answer to that question as to the report and where we are. Would you like to do that later or now? Right. And then the avian flu. The next question on avian flu, once again, out of my depth, it's very much an issue of poultry specialists, and poultry veterinary work is very specialized. The vice president of the veterinary council is Dr. Charlotte Mkuna. She is head of one of the poultry associations of South Africa, and she's very up on the poultry diseases. I would be presumptuous to say that I can comment, so I'm going to ask once again, because it's a state issue, for DAF to ask me on that question. Avian flu. And then the next question from the Honourable Menna on the outbreak of diseases. Once again, it is very difficult to control the outbreak of diseases if you haven't got the manpower there. And sometimes, and often I think, we do lack the manpower, because when you get a disease, it goes very quickly. You have to get in there, control the disease, and get out. And I think there are deficiencies that can be improved on, but I think those are being worked on as far as outbreaks of diseases are concerned. Was that the sort of thing you wanted to know? No more further. And then the limit to the number of institutions, I think I've addressed that, but it's really a matter of ideally you should have another veterinary faculty in this country somewhere close to the rural farming area. And one of our problems, for example, is that when Onderstepoort was originally started in 1916, I think it was 100 years, or 1920, that's a guess, it's 100 years in 2 years' time. That was in the farming rural areas of Pretoria, and it was started because there was a disease called Lamsikte botulism, and it was a major disease for South Africa, and that's why that faculty was started. And my personal opinion is, if we look to another faculty, which wouldn't be a bad idea, we should look to putting it in a place like PE or something like that, that it can address a different area, because there are different disease parameters. But that's something for the politicians and the people to find the money for. It's not going to be cheap. That's answer the question. As to the serious challenges, I don't think there are any serious challenges that we can say to the portfolio committee, listen, please, we're not getting help here, can you help us? So far, when we've addressed things with DAF and with that, the things have definitely improved. As I said, the one thing that does worry me a lot is this new thing that just arisen. In fact, it was only yesterday I was sitting in a meeting in Pretoria where the thing came up with the Minister of Health, with the medicines and that whole medicine control. You know, I feel very strongly that DAF and the veterinary profession should have control over veterinary medicines. Because it's unique, it's different, totally different the way you have resistance and the way you deal with it as a vet as opposed to humans. And vets know, I think, very much are at the forefront. Just to give you a little background, we've got a directorate in the Veterinary Council where we have got a Professor Modus von Vieren, who is a virologist and who is a world-renowned as far as antimicrobial resistance goes, which is antibiotic resistance, and he is doing incredibly good work in conjunction with DAF and he meets Dr. Modisani fairly regularly, and Dr. Modisani's got time to look at these issues. I hope, have I covered all the questions and answers? Thank you very much.
Leave that to the chair.
Yeah.
Now, Honorable State, your question about the avian flu as it relates to the cancer, can you repeat that one? Because you see, Doctor, I don't want you to refer to the department, because I assume that the question was specific about the cancer as to their home and so on. If you can repeat that one, because we want you to answer it. If you don't have any role, you must just indicate that we are not focusing on that one. It's far from our, it's not part of our start plan and so on and so forth. Then we know that it's not your issue. I'm not sure whether I'm capturing you correctly, because I thought you were specific to the cancer.
Yeah, Chairperson, but I think it was answered. I asked whether our veterinarians would play a role in this, and then also if there's a vaccine available which we could use in the country to vaccinate birds for, you know, in an outbreak like this. But I think the doctor can answer what he said. He's not a specialist on that, but it sounded like the vets are definitely involved.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for the protocol. I'm not always used to what the protocol is. As far as the veterinarians, there are very specialized avian veterinarians in this country, and they are dealing with this matter together with the government veterinarians or the state veterinarians of DAF, who must work with it. As far as the vaccines, Mr. Chairman, goes, I cannot answer that at this stage, because I have not got the knowledge for that.
Okay.
That would have to answer.
Okay. Dr. Modisani?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And honourable members, I just want to maybe on the issue that Dr. Adams already responded to on the outbreak of animal diseases, emphasize the point that he has emphasized in terms of the Animal Diseases Act of 1984, which specifically identifies diseases as controlled and notifiable, and diseases that are what I can call ordinary diseases that the state doesn't have to do anything about. And not necessarily that the state cannot do anything about, because the minister may also decide that a particular disease could be prioritized for purposes of improving production, and instruct the director to help a particular community on a particular disease. In his presentation, Dr. Adams, I think, briefly touched on the Animal Health Forum and the very good contact that the Veterinary Council is having with regards to the Animal Health Forum. And he tried to explain that the Animal Health Forum is industry plus private veterinarians plus state veterinarians together. And this is one forum that for the past years has been functioning very well in terms of both appraising one another on what is happening with animal diseases in the country and agreeing on a common strategy, despite the fact that there are specific protocols that are being followed if there is a particular disease outbreak. When it comes to controlled animal diseases, unfortunately, the Animal Diseases Act places a lot of powers on the department, the minister in particular, and also the director, animal health, from a point of view of understanding that some diseases are a public good, like foot and mouth disease, like avian influenza. And we have a presentation that we will do to the portfolio committee today verbally on what is the situation with the current avian influenza. And he also, Dr. Adams, indicated that some diseases could also be brought in by wild animals, like buffaloes bringing foot and mouth disease, and then wild birds, particularly migratory birds, carrying disease like avian influenza, for which we can only advise that farming communities improve on their biosecurity and how they manage people, fomites, and products going in and out of their country. The Animal Health Forum, honestly, it is one of the best structures that we have established in the country in terms of agreeing on common ways in which we can address animal diseases, and it is functioning very well. And it will relate to one question that Honorable Stephen asked on the implementation of the report that I will come into. But maybe to also appease honorable members on a perception that there is an increase in outbreaks of animal diseases, and although I'm not an expert in plant diseases, I will also maybe refer to the fall armyworm outbreak that we experienced last year. Increasingly throughout the world, there is trade in animal products and plant products, and there is movement of people that we really can't control that much. We can control through passports, but they can also be illegal imports and so on. And because it is a global environment, whatever happens in Nigeria may ultimately affect South Africa, in West Africa, in North Africa. And if one traces actually what happened with the fall armyworm, there were initial reports out there in West Africa, but because of the climatic conditions, the butterflies decided to fly to wherever it was warm. Similarly, with animal diseases, a similar thing happens. And when we do a presentation with avian influenza, we also try to give a perspective of how it could possibly have happened. So whatever happens in South Africa would affect what happens in Zimbabwe, would affect in what happens in Nigeria, and that is why most of the time we have to be vigilant of what is happening in the countries neighboring and in the countries even further away from us. So that is maybe to try and explain that we may have control, but we don't have total complete control, because some conditions may be brought in inadvertently through natural processes. Yes, Honorable Stein, we understood there was a problem with E. coli, particularly in the Free State. The issue was brought to our attention. We thought that the problem could have been related to vaccine. I personally took the matter up with OBP and brought the relevant people at OBP with the relevant farms. And I must say at this moment I haven't received any feedback as to what was the outcome of the investigation that was being done. Related to the vaccines, I think Dr. Adams did respond to that. And I believe there had been a lot of improvements with particularly strategic vaccines. I also understand that OBP did indicate particular challenges with reference to specific vaccines. And I want to refer to Clone 13, which there was an alternative to that vaccine. And of course, there were also challenges with particular reagents that I believe have been resolved. the compulsory community service, and I can only re-emphasize what Dr. Adams said in terms of the feedback that we are receiving from first the incumbents, the candidates for the compulsory community service. They have only given us positive feedback. The way we are now struggling with accommodating everyone after they have completed their compulsory community service, because majority of them wants to continue and work with us, and now we have to follow a proper placement process. But all we have received is honestly positive feedback. It is only that at the beginning of the placement, there are always concerns from the candidates about where they are going to be placed. But in the end, they end up enjoying, particularly if we can agree on placing them properly. But of course, there are still a couple of challenges related to the facilities, but the department is resolving that. On the issue of the implementation of the OIE recommendation, honourable members may remember that we developed two things after the OIE, what we called the PVS report, Performance of Veterinary Services. We developed an animal disease management plan, and we developed a veterinary strategy with a number of pillars. One of the pillars that we have agreed on is to improve on the management of important animal diseases. And both industry, the Animal Health Forum, the South African Veterinary Council, the South African Veterinary Association, and a number of pharma organization representatives, including organized industry, the Red Meat Industry Forum, the Red Producers Organization, we have agreed on coming up with a new strategy on the control of brucellosis. And we are going to use the control of brucellosis as a model for the control of other diseases. Of course, we are also looking at continuing with the control of the current diseases, animal diseases that actually impede animal production. And up to so far, if you look at the DAF website, and then also there is a gazetted document wherein there is a discussion document on the control of brucellosis, wherein we are looking for inputs from the stakeholders, and particularly industry and the farmers. We believe that in implementing that, it will guide us, particularly in terms of controlling other important animal diseases. There is also another discussion document which also covers another pillar of the implementation of the veterinary strategy. And of course, we understand that there is going to be fireworks on this one, because it is going to affect a majority of us. It is on the implementation of a very good South African animal identification and traceability policy. We are of the opinion that this is one area that the country needs to agree on in order to move forward. It will also help us be in a position to address issues like antimicrobial resistance and the use of chemicals in animals, particularly food-producing animals. One of the areas that we believe this will help us in is to particularly, kickstart our ability to be able to protect, export our animal products, but it will also be in a position to improve on our animal disease control. So there is a veterinary strategy, Honorable Steyn, that is for implementation with particular pillars. We have tried to incorporate some of these areas in the current government policies, including revitalization of agricultural value chains and agro-processing, and particularly from the Operation Pachisa point of view. The big question on bird flu and vaccination, I wanted to propose to the chairperson that maybe when we do the talk on bird flu and the current situation, we can talk to that. But briefly, as Dr. Adams indicated, highly pathogenic avian influenza is one of those animal diseases that are controlled. The state makes recommendation to the rest of the industry and to the rest of the profession on how this disease should be controlled. One of the key considerations when a decision is taken on whether a disease could be vaccinated for or whether a disease should not be vaccinated for is, will the state be able to differentiate an animal that has been infected or an animal that has been infected naturally or an animal that has been vaccinated? If there is any doubt that we will not be able to differentiate an animal that has been vaccinated and an animal that has been vaccinated naturally, a decision is often taken not to vaccinate at all. And a highly pathogenic avian influenza is, avian influenza is divided into two portions, which are highly pathogenic and low pathogenic. Often, low pathogenic doesn't kill the birds. And if it doesn't kill the birds, we can maybe tolerate it a little bit if it doesn't affect production that much. But some avian influenzas are so pathogenic that once they are introduced, within 3 days you start seeing mortalities. And I will just give a picture that one of the companies that has now been affected, in 1 day they lost 10,000 birds. So you can see how to differentiate. And I must say, members may also be aware that in certain situations, there has been some farms that had low pathogenic avian influenza. And members are also aware that in our ostrich industry, we have been for many years plagued by high pathogenic H5N2. And that we have been trying to cull, but the culling is not a sustainable approach. And then in some poultry farms, where they had a low pathogenic H6, we have encouraged vaccination. And therefore, because it doesn't kill, and sometimes it's not a trait-sensitive disease, and then it's not necessary to differentiate whether it is naturally infected or it is vaccinated. So I will talk to that in detail as we do a talk on and then again the debate Honorable Steyn and Honorable Chapa,
I can tell you now that the only thing which we wanted to respond on was the implementation of the recommendations of the OIE.
Okay.
And you have decided to emphasize and re-emphasize the answers that were provided earlier on. So because I want us to be focused. Today we are dealing with the strategic plan of the cancer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can proceed.
I'll stop here if you allow me.
No, deal with that last one, but don't go
okay.
Overboard.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to emphasize that the debate on a second faculty in the country has been going on, particularly with the Department of Higher Education. And of course, there has been some prohibitive elements related to the cost of the faculty and also the placement. So up to so far, the Department of Higher Education has not taken a final decision on where that discussion is going to be going. Thank you, Chairperson.
DDG, you want to add something, and I hope that you will not follow the Mutisanyo route.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Members. I think the only omission that was there in terms of our approach and in both Dr. Adams' presentation and Dr. Mutisanyo's presentation was that at international level, the issues that we are dealing with transboundary plant pests and diseases, including animal pests and diseases, is receiving attention. Within SADC also, there is a concerted effort to deal with transboundary diseases and pests. And yesterday there was a session that said on the fall animal. And in my discussions with FAO, they indicated that the next session that they will have will be around discussing avian influenza. As you would know, that we had the first reports in DRC, then coming to Zimbabwe, then South Africa. That if we don't go through improved coordination within the region, we will never be able to succeed in terms of pest control and disease control. Thank you very much, Edge.
Now, Dr. Adams, you know, in the previous engagement with this portfolio committee, you had raised three challenges. One of those is the one which was raised by Honorable Stein, that is the availability of vaccine at the OBP. And in your answer, you gave us your personal view or your personal opinion that relates to us giving them a chance, and then we'll see after 6 months what happens and so on. I don't think that this committee will be satisfied with that answer, because you see, when you raised the matter, this committee called OBP, and we engaged with the OBP on the availability of vaccine. We went to OBP as this committee to go and see for ourselves as to whether the vaccine is there or is not there. And they made a very long presentation. We said to the committee, you know, things are not okay and so on. What we wanted you to do was not to give us a personal opinion, just to confirm with this committee as to whether we now have available, we now have enough vaccine at OBP, is the council heavy and so on, things are being done the manner in which we wanted them to be done. That's what we want. Factual answer, not opinions. The second one which you raised as a concern, which we said you must also interact with the department and the minister in particular, it was about the registration of animal health technicians. You said it's a challenge, and you said interact with the department in order for you to attend to that particular problem. The third one, which you also raised as a challenge, was the regulation that requires the vets to seek permission before working with a threatened or protected species. That is the regulations from the Department of Environment. Have you interacted with the department? Have they attended to those and so on? Or are those still challenges? Those are the questions which we would want to respond to today, which we raised previously. You can note those. On our stand, I saw your hand was up again.
Chairperson, yes, I wanted to ask specific about the vaccines, but I think you can answer that. I also have a follow-up to Dr. Morisani on something that he said regarding that outbreak. But maybe let me ask it, because maybe the Dr. Adams is also aware of it. The reason why I asked about that outbreak of the disease in the Free State Chair is my concern exactly what Dr. Morisani now mentioned, that there was a possibility or investigation regarding vaccines, but he hasn't received the report. So I think it's important, Chair, if Dr. Marisone hasn't received that report, we at least get that, because if it was a problem linked to vaccines and vaccination, we need to know as a portfolio, because that's directly linked to, you know, problems that we pick up. My concern also was, Chair, why was it taking so long? That's why I originally asked this question of this thing of notifiable and control and whatever, because I'm not sure that system works well. And Chairperson, I know in the Free State specifically, and I would like to know from the department, last year the veterinarians didn't have money to travel. So they had their officers and whatever, but the budget cuts was so severe that they couldn't really travel to go and do things. So I want to find out if these things are interrelated, because I listened carefully to Dr. Marisani and Dr. Adams and everyone. It's all good and well. We have this place, this wonderful plans and ideas, and I know you're trying your best. I have a lot of sympathy. But if the budget cuts are severe and set these things, Chairperson, we're going to sit with more and more and more challenges. Because the diseases that we are discussing, the notifiable diseases, many of them affect humans. The avian influenza that we're discussing now can spread to humans. The tuberculosis can spread to humans. So I think one of the reasons why it's notifiable is also that we can look at the effect of that on humans. And if we just don't have the money and the capacity and the things out there to deal with it, I think, Chair, it needs to come to this portfolio so that we can deal with it and discuss it in a proper manner, like we've said with the budget debate. We need to find more money for agriculture so that we can deal with these things properly, Chair. So I would like to find out from Dr. Molisani if when he receives the report on the outbreak in the Free State, that report comes to the portfolio, especially if there's something that is linked to vaccination, so that we can see how to deal with it. Chair, and I want to find out, are we going to discuss the avian influenza issue today or not? I asked for that.
Honourable Jaisa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was very shocked when I heard Dr. Musani say that the acidic disease is part of the country and we can do nothing about it. But we can fight this, we went on some heaping up. My question is about this recalculation of the subject. So Dr. Adams was saying now they were talking to basic education and lobbying about the recalculation. And I just want to check, because you say that if this can start from the lower grades, so I want to check therefore if perhaps now from the lower grades up to grade 12, is it possible that these people, these students now up to grade 12 can be in a position to work as assistants without having to go to tertiary or to university? So I want to check on that. Because I know sometimes it's difficult now when we talk of curriculum in schools, because this has got to be done by SGBs and all those things. But department, basic education in particular, has been very much slow in changing the subjects. So I want to check on that. Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you very much. We can answer those questions. And I'm going to request you, Dr. Adams, Dr. Mudiswani and Dr. Ramashwadi, let's be specific. Answer the questions as raised. Let's not raise other issues, because if we raise other issues that are outside the question, they trigger other questions. So we might go on and on and on non-stop, and we have only 15 minutes. That's the last 15 minutes. Yes, Dr. Adams.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to address your questions first of all, because they are very important, and I'm glad that we came back to them. First of all, on the vaccine availability, and I don't know if I could ask you permission to do that. I could come back to this committee by email and give them some real facts and figures on the availability of vaccines at the moment. And I can do that within the next 10, 14 days, that I can actually go out there, I can do it very quickly, get from our colleagues on the availability of vaccines. Just to quickly say thank you very much to the Portfolio Committee for the action they took on OBP. I know that their visit and everything, that did make a huge difference to, I think, what's going to happen there. But on the actual figures, I can't give them to you off the cuff. I'd have to get them for you, and that I will do for you, if that would please you. As far as your second point on the AHTs go, the AHTs to me is a big problem. It remains a problem. So in my opinion, there's certain, like the Northwest University is training AHTs, that there are almost too many coming out. So where they're vets, they're too few, there are too many AHTs coming out. And these people often have got, you know, they go in there with expectations of jobs, and then there aren't jobs when they get out. I still think that AHTs in this country are underutilized. They should be better utilized by the private industry. They should be better utilized by the state and DAF, but they must be properly trained. And that's day one proficiencies. You can't put someone through a course and put them straight into the field unless they know what they're doing. So that does remain an ongoing problem, but we are addressing it as council, and I think DAF is working with us on that matter. Is that what answer your thing? As far as the TOPS go, the TOPS is one of the most prickly subjects, because it's, like I mentioned earlier on, it's almost a battle between DEA and DAF. So it's an issue that's dealt with by them and with us, and in fact it's now even under judicial and legal review. So I don't want to comment on it because it is sub judice, but it has not been sorted out to the veterinary profession satisfaction, definitely not. And it's something that has got to be sorted out, because it's affecting the whole wildlife industry in this country. As far as the member asked about the grade 12 students, and you know, if they're ready, I don't think that many of the grade 12 students that are qualifying at schools are adequately trained in science and maths, physics especially, chemistry, to be able to go on to a tertiary degree. That's not easy. We often blame the students for not passing, but I really think that it's the standards that they get exposed to at schools that are not high enough to go on and do a degree that's going to give them enough background to become a scientist. And at the end of the day, a veterinarian or doctor is a scientist, so definitely that must be looked at. My personal opinion is that we've got to tackle the sciences in this country. Is that what you were asking about? Have I answered all my questions? I think so. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I just have to explain to Honourable Steyn that the E-coli issue was a technical matter. It was not the fact that the vaccine wasn't available. It was the fact that the vaccine, somebody alleged that the vaccine is not working properly. Therefore, that is why it had to be investigated by the vaccine manufacturers. Honestly speaking, he was not obliged to come back to me, but if he had resolved the problem, then it would be fine. And maybe on the diseases that the state cannot do much about, I probably said it wrongly. It's from a state control point of view, because the veterinarian, the in-charge veterinarian can do something about animal diseases, but it is some of those diseases that the minister has to allocate the resources to the control of. If it is an ordinary abscess, the owner and the veterinarian can sort it out, but if it is foot and mouth disease, then government has to be involved. That is what I was trying to say. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you. Are you done? Oh, I thought that would go on and on and on. you surprised. Now, honourable members, you will recall that when we started the meeting, we agreed with the agenda as is. And on the agenda, what I was saying is only one item, which is the briefing on the strategic plan or goals of the council. But secondly, as I was consulting with the administrator, was to check as to whether was there communication to the department that today they will brief us on the avian, what do you call it? Avian influenza. That communication was not done, but I can tell you I have consulted with the CDG earlier on, just to establish as to whether if the chair can request them to brief us on this matter, because it's a matter of national importance and it's urgent. Whether are they ready, will they be able to do so? They did indicate to me that they will be able to do so if the chair can request them to do so. So I thought that I must put it before you members that the department, despite the fact that there was no communication, they are ready to give us a briefing on this matter, which is urgent, which is of national importance. Shall we go there and allow them to give us a briefing in 15 minutes and allow members to interact with that briefing? Are we agreed, members? Thank you very much, DDG, and thank you, Dr. Adams, for your presentation. We hope that the information that you said you will provide to this committee within the next 14 days, you will do so. We need that information. Because, you see, as a committee, when we do our work and so on, when people promise us certain things, we need to ensure that they do those things. So give us that information in order for us to know whether OBT is doing what is expected of them. Thank you very much. DDG Ramashodi?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I need to be guided. We have that presentation that we had conjured up, and we were of the opinion that because it was not on the agenda, we can talk to it, but we can also beam it if we are given just 2 minutes or so, just to set it up. I'll be guided by the chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Set up, DDG. Can have tea in the meantime for 2 minutes.
You got one?
I have one. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Good.
Oh, a copy? No, I don't have an electronic copy.
No, yet. If I give one to you.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
I must tell you that we don't have time, but I did indicate to the TDG that I will give you extra 5 minutes. So you have 15 minutes for presentation. And then I will give members 15 minutes to interact with the presentation. And then from there we must close the meeting. Do whatever you want to do. We have 15 minutes. Honourable members, I think we must now start with our meeting. I wanted Honourable State to be here when we start, or she's here. Yes, over to you. I don't know who's presenting, Dr. Mudifan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will try my best to stick to the allocated time. Just to give, I'll try by start to give you the general situation on avian flu, and then try to explain what is this avian flu and why do we have a problem. The as I indicated, they are avian flus that are called low pathogenic and avian flus that are called high pathogenic. And normally when we speak about avian flu, we will speak about H7N9 or H5 or even the swine flu that we used to call H1N1, if you remember very well, a couple of years ago. I will also try to give a little overview of the events reported by the OIE members to the rest of the world, and then also indicate what steps have we taken in terms of trying to impede the spread of the disease. Why do we call avian flu H something and something? It's because they have got the hemagglutinin portion in the nucleus. As you know, there is a cell wall. If you remember our biology, the cell wall, the cytoplasm, the nucleus, and then we've got all those mitochondria and so on. And that is where we can, when we type the virus, we can type the H and the N neuraminidase portion. And just to indicate that they are about, on the H side, there are about 16 of them, and then on the N side, there are 9 of them. So you can have H, 16, and 9, which can either be high pathogenic or low pathogenic. And as I indicated, low pathogenic strains normally cause no clinical signs in poultry, whereas high pathogenic strains cause severe clinical signs and potentially causes high deaths. The avian flu virus is shed in the fecal material, but it can also be shed in the respiratory secretions of infected birds, and therefore can either be spread through fecal material, through aerosol. It can also be spread by people and the tools that are used in the poultry production system, particularly also vehicles. And those are the kind of things that we call fomites. So basically meaning that if we have people working in an intensive poultry industry and then going out to their homes where there are poultry, they can also spread the disease. So therefore that also emphasizes the importance of biosecurity, the importance of showering in and then showering out, and then disinfecting the vehicles when they come in and out of the farms. This is just to give an indication to the members of the that have been causing problems worldwide, H5N1, and then I'm particularly highlighting H5N8, which is our current problem. But you probably know by now, honourable members, that in our ostrich industry, we have constantly been having challenges with the H5N2, and I want to believe that we have quite a strategy to handle it, as it hasn't been a big problem recently. And then I just wanted to indicate what has happened regarding the H5N8, particularly in the region, because we are particularly interested in this one. We have had countries in Africa, Cameroon, Congo, Democratic Republic, Egypt, Niger, Nigeria, Uganda, recently Zimbabwe, Mexico, United, Uganda and Zimbabwe, and then South Africa, which have been affected by the H5N8 strain. But we've also had countries like China, Chinese Taipei, and then also France and Germany that have been affected by the H5N8 strain. And this is the epidemic curve, just to indicate the years, in the months in the years in which there has been great outbreaks. This map just indicates H7N9 distribution in the world. And then just to indicate that the H5N1 also has been a problem in Northwest Africa and continues to cause outbreaks. The virus that we are particularly interested in, which is H5N8, also to also indicate its distribution in the wild base, which is the green dot, and then also its distribution in poultry. We can see in Africa we've got very few strains. The last strain, very few dots. The last dot is in Zimbabwe, very close to us. We now have our outbreak in South Africa, which was announced last week. H5N6, particularly in China and the Far East. And then what has happened since the outbreak of avian flu was announced? We happen to be having H5N8 still continuing to circulate in Europe, in Africa, and in Asia. However, our outbreak in South Africa last week indicates that your geographical distribution of the strain is still increasing. It is very important to heighten our surveillance in wild birds, but more than anything, it is very important for us to be sending out a message out there to our producers, particularly the intensive producers, to improve on biosecurity, to increase the likelihood of exposure of poultry. The improvement of biosecurity also includes trying to separate or prohibit wild birds from coming into contact with domestic birds. And our biggest challenge now in South Africa is the fact that we still have free-range production systems. And the message that we sent out to our producers when we got word that Zimbabwe was infected was to try to get them to house their free-ranging birds. But there are also free-roaming production systems in our rural areas, and we have been trying to also send out message out there for them to try and limit contact. When an outbreak was announced in Zimbabwe, we banned all imports. Fortunately, we had not been importing that much, but we were also importing racing pigeons, particularly for the million-dollar racing that normally takes place in Sun City. But we also advise people to keep away their chickens from open water sources, and then also to improve on disinfection. And the fact comes again that we don't advise that the birds should be vaccinated for highly pathogenic avian influenza. The outbreak that was announced last week, and I want to explain this properly, because the messages that are going out there from the radio and communications is that the outbreak is in the Free State. The fact that we are mentioning the town Villiers maybe is confusing, but the outbreak is on the banks of the Vaal River. The blue there is the Vaal River, but on the Mpumalanga side, and that is why we are saying that the outbreak is in Mpumalanga rather than in the Free State, because it is on the Mpumalanga side of the Vaal River. And the worst that could have happened is it hit on the breeder stock. It is not on the broilers, it is on the breeder stock. These are breeding birds. It's a very difficult system, honorable members, that you know that they are grandparent stock and they are parent stock. So this is on the parent stock, and unfortunately it was also on the layer side. The parent stock can also be divided into the rearing side, where we rear small chicks from 1 day old to laying age, and then take those birds, put them in a different system where they can start laying eggs. And the eggs that these birds are laying are the birds that are taken into the hatchery, wherein day old chicks will be hatched to produce broilers. And that is why this particular farm that was affected is very critical, because it is the supplier farm to our production system. The danger is we can impact very severely on security if this disease is not dealt. On Friday, another farm was found to be positive, and that farm is in Standerton in the Mpumalanga area too. This farm has got 280,000 birds, and the first farm has got 285,000 birds. And the farm in Standerton, mortalities of up to 10,000 were already reported by Friday, and we are busy culling both farms. Unfortunately, we culled the one house in Villiers by Friday, but the other houses started being affected. And yesterday morning, I was informed that all of the laying sites will be culled, and that will be around 200,000 beds. And then in Standerton, again, three houses will be culled, and that would be close to another 200,000 beds. So we are hoping to keep the disease in there. We are hoping that the rural communities are not going to be infected. When we got to hear about the outbreak in Zimbabwe, we established a contingency plan already. We have a contingency plan, but we called an industry meeting where we try to modify it. We place the farm under quarantine, and then we do backward tracing from the affected farm, and then we try to cull the farms in a humane manner. And then the biggest problem that we are encountering now is the disposal of birds in a proper manner to prevent this type of infection. We went to the, particularly to the hatchery in Standerton, where in the eggs that were collected from the breeding site were going to be hatched to produce broilers. We broke all the eggs and then macerated them and then got rid of them. So it's a whole big process that we have been following. We have placed quarantine for 30 kilometers, but we have also made movement restrictions for a 3 kilometer radius. And please, honorable members, I beg for your understanding. In order to try and not spread the disease all over the country, we have placed a ban on the sale of live spent hens across the country. We understand the impact this will have on food security. We just are concerned about the men on the bike that is going around selling chickens and maybe spreading the disease. For now, I want to emphasize that it will only be for a short period until we have determined the extent of the outbreak. We are conducting active passive surveillance. We have called a meeting with all the provincial directors and all the poultry veterinarians on Thursday, wherein we are going to try and speak to them on what on what should be done. The impact, obviously, Chairperson, is the fact that our ostrich exports to the EU have been stopped. Our chicken meat exports to the region have been stopped. Our exports have been stopped even as far as Israel. We have received a letter from the government of Israel saying that they won't accept any chicken products from us. However, we are very strong in believing that we will still be able to access our markets if we use the compartment. And then the ostrich heated products, we have spoken to the EU. I personally called the commissioner at the European Union, and he has indicated that they will continue accepting products from South Africa if they are heat treated. So, in summary, we are very concerned that this industry has been hit by quite a number of problems recently, and obviously this disease will exacerbate their challenges. One of the biggest challenges that the department will experience if we have to cull on a proactive basis will be the issue of compensation. Section 19 of the Act does allow us to the minister to compensate. So we still have to talk to those areas that we are going to cut proactively. So in summary, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, this is what we are doing. We are conducting surveillance and then we are sending out messages on biosecurity, and I emphasize we are not going to vaccinate for the reasons that I have already explained. And this is our response in terms of this outbreak. We want to improve on communication. More than anything, we want to also encourage creating awareness in terms of early reporting. And then we have had discussions with the Department of Health yesterday. And honorable members, I may say and maybe reassure you that H5N8 is not known to affect human beings, so there shouldn't be concern. But obviously from the Department of Health, Department of Agriculture's point of view, we would not encourage people to consume the chicken. So that is why we want to take control and make sure that thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope I didn't run over time. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Dr. Montisani. DDG, are you covered?
I'm covered, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, it's time for questions and comments. I see Honorable Stated, Honorable Trapper, and Honorable Kruger. I almost said Van Darden. I almost said Van Darden. Yeah. And Honorable Member, can you just be specific? Raise our question and just be specific. Not take a very long time with motivations and so on. We don't have time. In that order, Honorable Steyn, Honorable Trapper, then Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I want to thank the department for proactively preparing for this meeting today, but I think they had a warning. Chairperson, and thank you for allowing it. I think it's very important that we do discuss it. I am equally concerned that we have now got this disease in our country, and as we all know, it spreads quite far. My question would be proactively looking at the rest of the country. How do we test it? Can we test animals or chickens even before they show signs of the disease, and is it being done? On that, the cost of that, because someone, and in this case I'm sure it must be the poultry producers, must then pay for that. How much does it cost to test a chicken? Do you test one or two in a house? Do you test everyone? How does that work? I would like to find out from that. Then secondly, Chair, I think we've already been told that you are advised not to eat the chickens when it is cold. If you do eat it, what kind of signs will it be? Say, for instance, a human then eats it, what kind of signs will they show, so that we can also tell people to be on the lookout for that? Thirdly, Chair, my worry is the ban of live chickens. We all know in all our rural areas that's the way it happens. What kind of communication does go out? And I think, you know, are we playing it on radio stations and so on? But I don't think we're going to be able to stop it, Chair, because that's the livelihood of people. If they can't sell their chickens for 2 to 3 weeks, it is going to have a massive impact on rural areas. So I would rather think, Chairperson, maybe between the department and Department of Health, is they need to focus on signs of disease, so that when a person ate the chicken, or they, you know, they can see that there's a problem, rather than try and ask them. I know what the ban is for, but I don't think we're going to stop it. So I think proactively, Chair, we need to maybe focus on what will happen if people have eat one of the chickens that has been affected, so that we can assist with that. And then lastly, on the thing of the minister that could say that they could be compensated, is there any plans like that? Because just listening to that 200,000 chickens that's being culled at the moment, it is going to have a massive impact on that specific farm. Has some kind of estimation been done on the cost, just on the 200,000 chickens, so that we can have some kind of idea? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's only on two questions. One is on the is there any possible impact on the import system or process, whether people the import might take advantage of their products. And then secondly, it's on the, you mentioned the free roaming, the free range on the roaming ones, which I think they are mainly maybe the indigenous ones in the rural areas. How much are these being affected? And then lastly, on the banning of the movement, I think movement is banning on the live ones. Is there a possibility that people can try to circumvent by transporting them, having been slaughtered, if the banning is on live ones? Thank you, Chair.
I'm sort of covered. My worry is the small farmers, especially the chicken farmers and of course the egg farmers as well. What is the department's footprint and how are they going to communicate with us small farmers and small producers about the outbreak? That's the first point. The second point is question is eggs. How do you test eggs if they're infected? Is there a way to test it without breaking it? Because it's going to be a problem, you know, if it's broken, it's broken. And then the third question, Chair, exports. Does the department know more or less what is our exports at the moment and what influence will, in Rand, what influence will this have on our GDP? Because it can have a huge influence. Does the department make that calculations? And can I just communicate it for us, to us? Thank you.
I will come to the second half. I closed the first round. I'm not sure where you were. I think you were outside.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe let me start from the last question on exports. Even if I may not be able to give the exact figures, I know that we are supplying chickens to, especially meat, to the region. We are region, especially SADC, up to probably even Nigeria. We're also supplying breeding stock to the region, including even Zimbabwe. And that is obviously going to be impacted. We are selling our raw ostrich meat to the EU. That is obviously going to come to a halt, but we can still export our heat-treated ostrich meat to the EU. Our biggest advantage, however, Honourable Member, is that before we had this outbreak, we had already established a compartment system that we can be able to negotiate with, that we export from our compartments. If we can prove that a particular compartment has not been affected, we will be able to export from those compartments. Hopefully, Honourable Chair, our exports will not be that impacted. I mean, the impact won't be that big, hopefully, but there are certain countries that have already banned our exports, like I indicated, Israel. And we haven't had anything from other countries up to so far. Honorable Max, you will also remember that when I presented, I said, please bear with us on the export, on the movement of live hens. The main reason is not really to prohibit, but to try and limit the spread of the disease. And we are going to be an assessment in the next 2 weeks to say, is this an effective way? Of course, with due consideration to the impact on food security, particularly in the rural areas and particularly in the townships, Soshanguve, Mabani, Mafikeng, Mabatu, and so on, Soweto, and so on. We understand that this is going to have a very big impact, but we'll do a reassessment very soon. Our approach, Honorable Stein, is to ask the producers, because these are spent hens, the hens that have finished their laying cycles, that have to be depleted, that the companies keep them a little longer when we do an assessment so that they don't go out. But Dr. Nguna from the poultry industry is also doing an investigation of whether these birds could not be slaughtered before they are sent out. But quite often at the abattoirs, the birds may be slightly very big to can go through the machines TB slaughtered. So we are still looking at that. But this is not going to be a permanent situation. We'll be in a position to relook this whole thing very soon. Let me try and start from the top. Testing. There are simple ways that can be done before birds are allowed to be moved. We can either look at the blood and do serological tests, or we can swab the trachea and the cloaca and then check for the virus if it is there. So we have come up with a system that within the 3 kilometer radius of the outbreak, when birds are to be moved, maybe to the abattoir, we could do that pre-testing. Within 2 to 3 days, you can get the results back and then the birds can be moved. And that is what we are going to be doing up to so far. From the cost point of view, the department has considered that it will bear the costs of the testing. We are busy doing a submission to National Treasury for unforeseen and unavoidable expenses, because this was unforeseen and it is unavoidable. We are hoping that it will be accepted for the cost of the testing, so that we don't add additional costs to the producers. Coming to the eating of the dead chickens, the concern really is not from the zoonotic effects of the disease. As I indicated, H5N8 is not known to affect people. So we're not really concerned from that point of view. But more than anything, it's from the aesthetic point of view. We cannot encourage people to consume dead animals, diseased or not diseased, dead from the point of view of not being slaughtered, but from a point of view of just dying, because there could be other adverse effects. It is for food safety point of view. As I indicated, from the communications point of view, we have been, Dr. Maja has been on TV, she has been on radio. Our communications section has also been talking to the media to try and alert the public out there. And as I indicated, on Thursday we have a meeting with the government communicators for a common message to be sent out there to the provinces. There is a question on import replacement. It is something that we have to guard against. We don't want to believe that that will be the situation, because it's not a complete ban on the slaughter of birds. We'll still allow it, but we will allow it under a controlled situation. However, as Honorable Stein has indicated, we are all very concerned should this disease spread to the major Standerton and Villiers. It's a major poultry producing area. But there are other major poultry producing areas in the Western Cape, for instance. And then we just want to maybe use this opportunity to request the poultry producers to really be very vigilant and try to keep wild birds away, so that it doesn't impact on them. Because if more birds die, we have a food security situation, and we cannot allow that to happen. And then on the indigenous, the only thing that we can do, Honorable Clapper, is to advise that the producers keep their birds away from wild birds, and especially for water purposes and for feed. We have actually sent out an instruction to the free range owners or producers to keep their, to house their beds. And the only advice that we can give to the indigenous public in terms of poultry is for them to house their beds for now until this business is gone. And that also goes to the small farmers. And then your the honourable member's concern on the eggs. Fortunately, the eggs don't get infected. Hopefully, from inside, they can get contaminated on the outside. For major laying establishments, we advise that the eggs must be disinfected before they are moved, so that the virus could be killed. Fortunately, this virus can easily be killed by a whole lot of things. So we are advising that they disinfect their eggs before they send them out. So thank you very much. Another question.
Thanks, Chair. Dr. Modisana, you nearly covered some of my question when you respond. I wanted to find out if maybe we can have a time frame as to usually, maybe from their experience, how long it takes to control such an outbreak. Because really, to me, is going forward, it will have the negative impact on the market and as well as the labor, I think.
Tom, the submission to Treasury, is it their own testing only or have you included the compensation? If you did not include the compensation, do you have the resources to compensate? The second one is on enforcement. Who's going to enforce the national banning order or the national ban? Is it yourself, or are you interacting with law enforcement agencies, or how are you going to enforce it? The last one is on the communication. You know, the once-off communication, I don't think it will assist. I have seen, of course, Dr. Maja on television and so on, and I'm aware that you are going to meet with other communicators for you to communicate one message and so on. Are you not investigating possibilities of having something on radio? I don't know what is it called. Is it a promo? An advert? I don't know what is it called. Which can be there maybe twice a day and so on, just to indicate to people that there is this particular thing, this is how we are supposed to react and so on. Just on a continuous basis. Instead of you going on TV this month, then finish this course. Are you not investigating those possibilities? I know that it has got the financial implications, which you might also include in your submission. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. You are absolutely correct. I don't know, maybe what you have in mind is what the communicators call a sound bite. And I know that our communicators have spoken about that, and we specifically said that it does not help to speak to SAFM or Radio 702 because our people out there in the rural communities also listen to Radio Tobela and Mojidi, and that it should go as far back as Ikwezi FM and all those, so that we have sound bites in all the radio stations. And that is the plan that I believe our communicators will also help with. Maybe to talk on the issue of the submission to Treasury. It's going to cater for all of enforcement, it is going to cater for all of compensation, it is going to cater for all of testing and surveillance afterwards. Normally, Honorable Mapanga,
the avian influenza, if it is introduced in a farm, the normal incubation period is at least 21 days for clinical signs to appear. Normally, after the last outbreak has been handled, we often consider a period of two incubation periods, which will be about 42 days after the outbreak, in which surveillance has to be conducted, and then we can reassure everyone that the disease is no longer, and then we can reopen trade. So it will depend on the enforcement that we are all doing in terms of trying to cap the spread of the disease as to how long will it take. At this moment, Chairperson, we cannot say we know for sure that the disease is only in VBS or in standard care. We don't know what is happening, and that is why we are sending out all the provincial directors and Dr. Adams, all the private vets, all the vets in the country to go out there and put their ear on the ground and then report as soon as they are suspicious. And then we are trying to put state veterinarians very attached to the private practitioners to try and follow up on any reports that are actually coming up. We have even, I've seen on yesterday's paper that Mr. Lavell, the CEO of South African Poultry Association, has requested the public to report any suspect mortalities, even in wild birds, so that we can improve on the reactions, our reactions surrounding the death of even the wild birds, the wild ducks, and so on. Under normal circumstances, Chair, when we have this situation, we have to get our minister and the minister of COPTA to declare a disaster. And then in situations like this, we often even employ the defense force to help us. And we have contact in the defense force that we have already alerted to a possible situation. Dr. Paul van den Merwe, and they are willing to help us, because enforcement is very difficult. But of course, there are also practical issues that we have to look at. The farm in Villiers is very close to the entry going to Durban and up. And closing the entry would be a big disaster for the rest of the country in terms of trade. But of course, there are certain practical issues that we have to look into. For instance, very close to the farm, there's a truck stop. We can probably say any poultry carrying truck is not allowed to stop there. And that is why we have to bring in the police, the traffic officials, and the defense force to enforce that. So they are, this is probably, Chairperson, one of the biggest challenges we have had in terms of an animal disease outbreak that we have to handle. And then we have to bring in all the resources that are available in the country. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, Dr. Mujisan. Now, honorable members, I think we all agreed that that immediately when we come back, we'll have to call the department again to come and give us a progress report, because this is a matter which will need to be monitored on a regular basis, because it has got a potential to cause serious problems in the country. Job losses and so on and so forth. And this industry, it is not only about this. We know that in the poultry industry, there are other challenges and so on, and we need to save this industry. Now, this other thing again is causing a lot of problems. So we are going to call you, so you must be ready, Dr. Mulisan. I know that today I have hijacked you, but like soldiers, we are combat ready. I'm happy that you were you have combat right. Now, members, I want to close. Okay.
Chairperson, I agree with you on that, except maybe if there's an outbreak in another part of the country, then we're going to sit with a crisis. And I think we need to agree on that, that then we must communicate with each other on how are we going to deal with that.
So thank you very much, Dr. Modisani and DDG Ramashodi. May Albertina Ramase Ramashodi. I prefer Ramashodi. Ramashodi is the best. And thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.